The war on drugs in South Africa has come in the spotlight again in recent months following the deployment of members of the military to the gang-ridden Cape Flats to help stabilize the area. Drugs have been pinpointed as a key fixture in the gang-ridden world, raising questions regarding whether or not the decriminalization of drugs could help improve the situation. OFMU spoke to memoirist and recovered crystal meth addict Costa Karastafrakis on his recently released memoir and got his thoughts on the decriminalization debate.
OFM News Extra. In touch with your world.
Karastafrakis' memoir, I Am Costa, From Meth to Marathons, has been described as inspirational, brave, and brutally honest. The 210-page book, launched in July in all major bookstores, takes you through the highs and lows of Costa's colorful life, bearing his soul about feeling alienated as a young Johannesburg-raised geek boy, ending up with a heavy crystal meth addiction. Speaking to OFM News on the Bloemfontein leg of his nationwide book tour, Karastafrakis shares what compelled him to share his story and takes us through his writing process.
My story is something that I had written down and said, told myself over and over again. Through my recovery from drugs and alcohol addiction, I joined a program where you do a lot of writing. Daily journaling. I've been journaling for years. In fact, I started journaling even before I started drugs. So writing has been something that I would just do. I would just dump my thoughts down, put my emotions on a piece of paper and just leave it there. I found that very therapeutic for me. And then 2 years ago, I sat down and with volumes of daily journals and just lots of paper lying around, I said, well, maybe this could work into a story that I could tell myself. So I wrote the story and I wrote the book for me to just kind of put it into some coherent meaning. And as I started writing it, it first started out just as a health book, actually. A lot of people were asking me, how did you get so healthy? How did you get so fit? How do you stay so fit? So I started writing about fitness, and then the layers started coming off. And under the fitness was health, and under health was mental health, and then the addiction, and then the root cause of addiction, and then my life story unfolded. And so I wrote the book once, and then my publisher loved it and said, now let's go rewrite it. So we rewrote it, giving it more personal flavors.
He shares a bit more about feeling alienated as a child and how, in hindsight, he sees that he was quite depressed. He is now passionate about destigmatizing mental illness.
I always felt something different about myself. I never fitted in. I was either the skinny guy, the shortest guy, or the tall, skinny guy when I was tall, the little Greek who ate strange food, the odd one out, the boy who wasn't growing up to be a typical man, the more feminine boy that couldn't find his place, the boy who got bullied a lot. And the bullying was really tough in particularly primary school, in early primary school. Kids can be really, really mean. And what happened to me is I went into my shell. I thought there was something wrong with me. And I listened to all these cues and I took them on. But when I was at home, life was great. Home life was amazing. I had cousins, I had a sister, I had parents who loved me. I was allowed to be myself. But as soon as I left the home, all the masks had to be put on. And it felt very, very uncomfortable. I was fearful. And life started out with a lot of anxiety as a young boy. Anxiety and depression. I now realize it was depression, but I would sit alone. I didn't have many friends. I was an underachiever at school, and it concerned my parents enough to send me for evaluation, etc. And then puberty hit, and I got drunk for the first time. And that's when I realized, you know, I could handle my emotions or actually feel better if I drank. It felt good, dangerously so. I obviously didn't drink too much in my early teens, but I would get drunk. Then I started smoking at 14. Also a little high that, you know, helped take the edge off the nerves and the stress. So I'm here to destigmatize mental health. A lot of people don't understand it, just from a fear of it. Mm-hmm. It affects a lot of people in many different ways, and it is a burden for many families to carry. It's something that people don't understand and is a burden not only for the person who has the mental health issues, but also the family around them. So I'm here to normalize it. And what happens to a diabetic? A diabetic is not judged. Mm. They test their blood sugar levels. Should they need diabetes medication, they go on it, etc., etc., and everybody around them supports them. If mental health is something that you have, like I have, then I need to look at it. I need to understand it, and then I need to get the relevant help. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've done, to the point where I've accepted that my mental health journey is my lifelong journey. It is something that I work at every single day. Mm-hmm. I have either been in therapy when I've needed to be, or on specific medication should my psychiatrist recommend it, or I'm part of a 12-step recovery program, which I actively work mm-hmm. on a daily basis. All of them are this support network. That's my professional support network, because a lot of people don't understand what I'm going through. So I need people who do. I need that therapist or that counselor or that other recovering drug addict mm-hmm. who gets me, because my family try their best to love me, but they don't really understand exactly how I feel, and I don't expect them to, because they're not in the situation I'm in. Mm-hmm. So I definitely need that professional bolt on to my life. Added to that, I need all the other things that make life full and rich, the mm-hmm. texture of life, and that is my spirituality, my family, my friends, my partner, my loved ones. They are part of my recovery journey. Mm-hmm. So it is something that I put all together. It's an all-encompassing blanket that I fold myself in that includes the professionals, but as well as other people just like me. I find that when you speak to somebody else who's been through depression, such a sense of relief. It's like, I'm not the only one.
Yeah.
I'm not the only one who, like depression, for example, the way I explain it is you want your life to end, but you don't want to kill yourself. You just want to go for a very long sleep and never wake up. And of course, other people who've been through that know. They know that you can't just put on a smile. No matter, like the explanation I give is, when I was in the depths of depression, if you told me I'd won the lottery, the first thought that would go through my mind is, oh, where did I put the tickets?
Yeah.
And then I've got to find the tickets. And then I've got to go to the office and then claim the prize, and then I've got a tax implication, and then my friends are going to be wanting money from me, and then the burden of my lottery is all I'm thinking about. You can't even see the fact that you've just won 50 million rand.
Sorry about that. Mm-hmm.
I can't even see that I've won 50 million rand. All I can see is the burden that it brings. Mm-hmm. So that's what depression does. It robs me of that. And yeah, speaking to another depressive, they just nod and they go, I get it, I get it.
Karis Tofrakis is of the view that decriminalizing drugs is one way that society will begin to see drug addiction as the mental crisis that it is. He believes the only way to beat the scourge of drugs in society is to place addicts into programs, not in jail cells.
Drug addicts should not be shamed. Drug addicts should not be punished. There is a reason I use drugs. I could have been one of those statistics. If you'd put me into jail, I would have been exposed to more drugs, harder drugs, drugs that I would have only been able to afford by stealing more. But instead, gratefully, I wasn't arrested. And then eventually I got into recovery. I could have been that statistic. Decriminalizing drugs is incredibly important.
The memoirist references Portugal's revered approach to dealing with its heroin epidemic in the early 2000s and how he sees this as the answer to fighting the war on addiction.
Portugal has actually decriminalized drug possession and drug usage. So it is not illegal to be found with heroin on you. It is illegal to deal in heroin. It is illegal to import and distribute cocaine. But it's not illegal if you're caught having it, because what they've figured out in Portugal has the highest rate of heroin usage. 1% of the population was addicted to heroin in the early 2000s. I mean, that's hundreds of thousands of people. And what they realized is, by taking a heroin addict and punishing them and putting them in jail, it only increased their probability that they wouldn't recover. Why? Because in jail they're exposed to other elements that really are not feeding what the actual problem is. And the problem here is addiction. The problem is mental health. So they treat mental health and addiction. They treat addiction and drug addiction as a mental health crisis. What they do is if you're caught with heroin, then you are put into a program.
At the end of the book, Costa writes a letter to his 12-year-old self, which he ends off by saying, be yourself. Accept yourself. For you, it's a matter of life and death.
My name is Costa, and what I do is try and make the better version of myself every single day. So I live my life to better what I was yesterday. And what that has resulted for me is a life of forward-moving action away from drugs, depression, anxiety, mental illness, pain, to a life of spirit, health, love, and above all, tons of fun. So what do? I try and make myself better every day. And what that helps is by doing that, maybe it can help somebody else. Mm-hmm. That's essentially, in my essence, what I do.
This feature was compiled by Olebogeng Motse for OFM News in Bloemfontein.
OFM News Extra. In touch with your world.